to the Humanity Church Podcast, a place where meaningful conversations around living by faith, being known by love, and becoming a voice of hope are shared with the world every week. We hope that you enjoy this podcast and will join us live on Sundays at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, online, or at the historic Fox Theater in beautiful downtown Pomona. We also host humanity groups that meet all throughout the city and online to continue the conversation and support you in your ongoing spiritual journey. Find one near you by visiting humanitychurch.com. If you would like to financially support this podcast or the ongoing work at Humanity Church, you can text any donation amount to 84321 and give directly from your phone. Now, here's this week's podcast.
Have you ever been in a place where there was too much expected of you? You know what I'm talking about? I mean, I've experienced this so many places and so many times, but like, have you ever been in one of those spaces where you're at work and someone quits or someone is fired and they decide not to rehire for that position? And then they just decide to distribute all of the responsibilities to you and they're not gonna pay you more, but you're expected to do more, right? That's annoying, isn't it? And you're thinking, how on earth am I supposed to handle all these expectations? Or how many of you have ever looked around at your apartment or your house or wherever you live and thought, it is gonna take me a lifetime to complete everything that needs to get completed here? I spent like 3 hours yesterday cleaning out all kinds of things, painting walls and cleaning out air filters. And I thought, I haven't even made a dent on this house. It's gonna take me a year to get all through this. Or how many of you are in relationship with people and you know, maybe it's spoken or unspoken, that there are all kinds of expectations on you as to how you're supposed to show up? Like you're supposed to call a certain amount of times and you're supposed to be at all the events and you're never supposed to say no. You know what I'm talking about? And it feels overwhelming in that. I mean, as a pastor, I feel that. Not from this congregation, from the other congregation I pastor. But there is an expectation, like you're supposed to be a counselor and a therapist and a coach and a biblical scholar and supposed to show up at the hospital and to make sure that everything's running. There's a lot of expectation that comes and it can feel overwhelming. But have you ever felt that from God? Like there's a demand on your life that feels overwhelming or something that you actually cannot fulfill? I know I do at times. When I look at all of the things that God asks of me, it feels overwhelming at times, right? I mean, there's like, I'm supposed to love my neighbor, but I'm also supposed to share everything that I have, and I'm also supposed to be generous, and I'm supposed to be transformative, and I'm supposed to serve, and I'm supposed to get along with everyone, and I'm supposed to share my faith and watch how much alcohol I drink. You know, it's like all this, right? There's just so much that we are called to, and it can feel overwhelming at times. And then there are times in the scriptures where Jesus seems to not help this perception when he talks about how we are to live with one another specifically. Like in Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 21, Jesus is having this conversation. And this is known as the Sermon on the Mount, this like pinnacle of the teachings of Jesus. And in Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 21, he says, "You have heard it said to the people long ago, you shall not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment." Now, I imagine right there, people are thinking, I'm good, right? Because murdering someone is not on the bingo card this week, right? That's not on the plan. That's not even a hallucination of mine. Like, so I think they're thinking, oh, if this is the standard, I'm set, right? I'm good to go here. But then he says, "But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment." There it is, right? Now anger is on par with murder. Talk about high levels of expectations, right? But then he actually goes on, it gets worse. It says, "Again, anyone who says to his brother or sister, raka," which means like having contempt or saying like you're worthless or you're empty, there's no value in your life over there, "is answerable to the court. And anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell." So now you essentially say, you're stupid, hellfire for you, right? Now, I am not certain, but I feel like I am in imminent danger of hellfire. What on earth is happening here, right? I mean, my kid calls their brother stupid and they get a timeout, not eternal damnation, right? But that seems like that's what Jesus is implying here. Now, that might be a more effective parenting strategy, right? Called your brother a fool, hell for you, right? But either Jesus has ridiculously unreasonable standards that have incredibly harsh consequences that come with them. Or he's teaching us something in the grander scheme of what it means to be relational with one another, to actually connect to one another. See, if we were to go back in the Old Testament, God gives Moses these Ten Commandments. Even if you're here today and you don't really have a faith background, you probably have heard of these Ten Commandments. And he gives Moses these ten, like the ultimate standard for moral living. And you think, this is the pinnacle of the human experience. And when you look at them, there are things like, hey, I'm the only God here, so you should probably just have me. And also, if I'm the only God, you should probably just worship me, right? That would be a good thing to have there. And then he talks about honoring our father and mother and making sure that you gather together and have this Sabbath space. But then he sets this standard for humanity like this, like don't kill one another, right? And then he goes on and he says, you know, maybe also don't lie to one another. That would be a good standard. Don't take one another's stuff and each other's spouses while you're at it, right? And he's like, yeah, maybe don't covet what other people have. I mean, the bar is set pretty low for humanity right now, right? This isn't exactly like the pinnacle of the human experience that he gives to Moses and to us in that. Interestingly, of the Ten Commandments, only four of them have to do with him. Six of them have to do with how we relate to one another. So I love this because what it informs us of is that God is not actually interested in us performing for him in some way. If that's the case, all 10 would be about him. All 10 would be about, here's all the things I want you to do for me so that you can be good. Or here's all the things that I want you to do in this religious activity so that you can check off the boxes and say that you've made it and now we're connected with one another. But he's actually more interested in the attitude in which we relate to one another. He's actually more interested in how we relationally set up and structure our lives, seems even more so than it is how we connect to him. But we get these Ten Commandments, and then Jesus comes on the scene, and he changes everything, seemingly, because he's referring to them in this conversation here. He says, look, you're not supposed to murder one another, right? Low bar for humanity, right? He's like, don't kill one another in this process. But then he says, hey, that person over there that holds the image of God within them, who has the DNA of the divine within their bones, maybe you ought not to hold or harbor anger towards them. Because the attitude that actually causes you to murder is the same attitude that causes you to harbor anger towards your brother over there. See, it's not about the action, it's about the attitude that fuels the actions in which we live. And then Jesus equates staying angry with your brother and sister to murder. He's not placing more rules on us. He's not placing more demands on us. He's not saying, hey, if you do this, here's the next consequence, here's the next rule. He's actually elevating how we see one another. He's elevating our perspective of how we view humanity. It's no longer, can you please not kill one another? Low bar. He's saying, no, I'm actually elevating the bar for you and for everyone else around me. Will you lay down your anger? And will you lay down your contempt for one another that is sure to rise up? See, it's not about imposing more religion on us. It's not about making things harder. It's not about ratcheting down the process. It's about elevating your and my perspective on humanity. Because that person over there bears the DNA of God within them. So you no longer have the luxury of harboring anger. You no longer have the luxury of harboring contempt. You no longer have the luxury of staying in this place. And this is what I love about Jesus, is that he is never interested in making our lives harder. He's actually not interested in making your life more difficult and putting more rules on you and putting more regulations on you. He is interested in transforming how we see one another. The eyes through which we view humanity and the world around us. And in that, it elevates what it means to be human. Yeah. And then he goes on to say this, after he talks about the anger and fires of hell. He says this, therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar and remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them. then come and offer your gift. You know, as a pastor, I hear so many times, and rightfully so in many cases, the church just wants my money. And I get that. There are some contexts in which the church really does want your money. But for the most part, if the church was just about your money, we're doing this wrong, right? Because most of what we do is free, right? No one, there wasn't like a $10 charge to get in here. There wasn't like a, hey, tip your worship leader at the end of your service, right? There's none of that. We could do that, right? But there's none of that. We have a voluntary time where you can give of your resources. But if we're about money, we're definitely setting this thing up wrong. Because let me tell you, there are experiences far less frequent than this that people charge lots of money for. And so that could be the case. But what I love is that Jesus gives us, again, a snapshot into what he cares about most, because Jesus says, if you're bringing your gift to God, if you are engaging in some religious activity, if you are in the middle of worship, and if you're in the middle of prayer, if you're in the middle of fasting, if you're in the middle of reading your scripture or serving in some context, and you realize that someone has beef with you, that there is a break in a relationship somewhere, that somewhere the relational ties have been severed. I don't want your money. I want you to reconcile. So leave your offering here. Come back and give it. Don't forget that. But he says, go and reconcile with them and then come back. I love this because it gives us a massive look into the priorities of God here in this moment. I'm not interested in having you give stuff to me, and I'm not interested in having you do stuff to me if you have no interest in living in unity with your brothers and sisters. I don't want you to do stuff for me. See, he's saying, I could care less if you have the appearance of righteousness. I could care less if you do all the things that you're supposed to do. If your righteousness does not impact your heart and your attitude, it is all smoke and mirrors. And it doesn't actually mean anything. See, you know that you've actually connected with the heart and the Spirit of God when it impacts how you relate and how you see and how you connect to one another. Because it makes no difference if you're going to sacrifice your money if you're not willing to sacrifice your ego. It makes no difference. And we live in a culture, without sounding like that old man in the room, right? Yeah, get off my lawn, right? We live in a culture that is highly offendable. And here's the other thing. Being offended is like the worst possible thing that could happen to you. There's like being shot by a gun in the face and being offended, right? And we've elevated offense to this. And here's my perspective. It's more than just oversensitivity. It's more than that. I know people are always like, oh, just get over it. I actually think it's a much deeper issue than just being a highly sensitive generation. And when I say generation, I mean if you're alive today, you're in this generation. Proverbs 19:11 says, a person's wisdom yields patience. It's to one's own glory to overlook an offense. It's interesting, when the scriptures talk about offense, and when it talks about being offended, it seems like it's a choice rather than something that happens to you. But when we talk about offense, it's something that happens to us. So we say things like, you offended me. That's different from, I'm choosing to be offended. That's very different in the grand scheme of things. See, if they did it to you, if they're the ones that offended you, if they're the ones that heaped this offense on you, then guess what? You will always be at the mercy of other people. You will always be the victim to other people's offense if it's something that is done to you. And I actually think this is why the scriptures talk about offense as almost like a double poison that happens when we engage in it. See, when you choose to be offended, you actually lose the agency that God has given you to transform the world around you. You actually lose it. See, here's the thing. Oftentimes, when we are offended, when we say we're offended, what we're oftentimes unwilling to say is, I'm hurt. I was betrayed. I'm really angry, or I feel disrespected, or I am isolated, or I feel unheard. Those aren't choices. Those are human experiences that happen to us. And we certainly have a choice as to how much we want to continue in those experiences. But here's the beautiful thing about that is when I recognize, oh, I'm actually hurt, or I'm disrespected, or I'm unheard, I can actually do something about that. I can actually bring it to the Spirit of God, and I can bring it to another person to heal, to restore, to bring restoration in the middle of that. But here's the thing. When our ego rises up in the midst of being hurt, in the midst of being betrayed, in the midst of being unheard, in the midst of being angry in whatever's taking place around us, our ego rises up and we just say, I don't want to, right? Yep. Let's just be honest. How many of you have ever been hurt, offended, unheard, and you're just like, I just don't want to deal with it? Never. It's too much energy, right? It's actually too much. It's too much work. It's going to be uncomfortable. It's going to be awkward to have that conversation. I don't know how it's going to go, so now I'm going to feel out of control, and I don't know how that other person's going to respond to me. Ever been there? Ever find yourself there? And this is oftentimes why we resist that. So rather than being hurt or unheard or disrespected and redirecting our energies back towards unification, towards restoration, towards connecting, towards this call of God on our lives to live as one, we start to heap judgment on the hurt. It becomes like fuel for the disrespect, for the unheard, for the anger. And we start pouring the fuel of judgment on it. And the judgment that I oftentimes notice in my life and other people's lives when I'm in this space is I start assigning intent to what that other person did. Because there's the thing that they did that hurt you or that was a betrayal. But how many of you have then added intent to the hurt? They did this because. They did this because they were trying to be mean. They did this because they wanted to disrespect me. They did this because they had no interest in being friends, and they threw everything away, and they don't care about me at all. Right? We start to add intent onto the action, and then it starts to blow up. And here's the thing. What if offense was just hurt with judgment thrown on it? And now I'm offended based on what I imagine your intent was in the midst of the hurt or the disrespect or the anger or the unhurriedness. See, you are never offended. You choose offense. And here's why I believe it's like this double poison and why Jesus is like, you better go deal with that before you give your offering or do anything else in the midst of that, is because first, you lose your God-given power to do anything about it. God has actually given you the power to transform a relationship, to bring unity, to bring healing, to bring restoration. If you believe you are offended by them, guess what? They're calling the shots in your life, not you. And you've lost your agency to actually say, no, I choose unity. I choose restoration. I choose healing. So I'm actually going to go do something to restore that. That's the first thing that happens. But second is the only possibility is separation. The only possibility in the midst of offense is disconnection, disunity. Brokenness, chaos starts to ensue. And this is in direct opposition for what God is calling us into that we talked about yesterday, that Jesus prayed for those of us who called ourselves followers of Jesus that we would be one with one another. See, there is something so powerful about laying down our choice to be offended and address the hurt. And to say, I'm actually going to do something about the breach in relationship. Yeah. See, there's a big difference between going to someone and say, you offended me, and saying, I was hurt. Could we talk through that? I felt like I wasn't heard. I experienced disrespect. I was really angry that happened. There's something so powerful about that because God can actually move in the midst of that. See, the problem is we don't actually trust that he's big enough in the midst of our perceived relational chaos. And so we would rather be offended and take power into our own hands than allow him to move in the midst of our restoration and healing. See, now, it's one thing to control our choosing to be offended. It's a whole other thing to clean up where we have been offensive, right? That's a whole other thing. And this is what Jesus calls us to, is he says, leave your gift if you recognize that you have offended someone. If someone has something against you, if someone has some beef with you, if someone has some brokenness in the relationship with you, leave your gift and you go make it right. See, I love this. Could you imagine what it would look like if people who called themselves followers of Jesus were both unoffendable but willing to clean up every place they offend? The world would look radically different instantly, overnight. I love this passage in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, starting in verse 21. And I don't know if I'd ever read it this way before, but I think this has everything to do with how we live in offense and how we offend one another. It says, do not pay attention to every word people say. That right there, we could just stop right there, right? We could just stop right there. You do not have to reply to every post on Facebook. You do not have to make a comment on every Instagram story that offends you. I promise you, you can just scroll on by, right? Or, so do not pay attention to every word people say, or you may hear your servant cursing you, right? For you know in your heart that many times you yourself have cursed others. In other words, look, it's like, hey, let's not be so sensitive to what other people say. And sometimes, like, the best theology comes from Frozen. Let it go, right? Just let it go.
That's right.
See, you can find something to be hurt or offended or, like, annoyed by in almost every conversation, I guarantee you. If you're looking for it, you will find it, I promise you. If you are engaged from a space of like, all right, oh, I heard them. They're talking bad about me. That was smack. I didn't like the way they looked at me. They said that funny, right? We will find offense in almost anything. But have you noticed that when we offend others, there's so much grace for ourselves that we extend ourselves? Like, everyone else is out to get us, and everyone else is out to offend us. But when we offend someone else, it's like, oh my gosh, they're being so sensitive. They don't know my motives. You don't know my heart, right? And so we do not extend the same grace to ourselves that we extend to other people. And we expect other people to get over it when we offend them. But when we're offended, it's sometimes not even three strikes and you're out. It's one strike and I'm out, right? And if we were with others in the same way that we wanted them to be with us, if we engaged relationally with others in the same way that we would want other people to be with us, we would be those who take account for the places where we've offended. We would be those who would ruthlessly go after the places where we have had a breach in the relationship or where things have gone wrong or things have gone wonky. See, because in this conversation, it's easy to connect to how this happens with one another, but I don't know about you, but I wonder how many times our lives have offended God. I wonder how many times our thoughts have been offensive to him. Every time we choose fear over the call on our life. Every time we choose to play small when he invites us into the larger unknown. Every time he calls us to love in a way that requires us to lay down our ego and we say, no, thank you. I wonder how many times our thoughts, our actions, our beliefs are actually offended the Kim, that the creator of the universe chooses to not be offended by the places where we are offensive to him. That he has every right to live in offense towards how we relate to ourselves, his creation, towards him, and towards one another, and towards the world in which we live. And if the creator of the universe can choose to be unoffendable towards me, I think that it's possible for us to follow suit. Yeah. I don't know about you, but I get overwhelmed sometimes by how messy the church is. It's a mess. I don't know if you know this. And I signed up to lead this thing. But, you know, but I used to get so frustrated by it. I used to be like, gosh, what is wrong with the church? But then I started doing work in the business world, and I was like, oh, this isn't a church problem. This is a people problem. Anywhere you put human beings together in a collective herd, you are going to have all kinds of mess that comes with it. Because we clash, we struggle with our own ego, we struggle with our need to be right, we struggle with comfort and our need to stay in control of things, and it just creates conflict anywhere and everywhere we go. See, it's never if you're going to experience conflict, it's when you're going to experience conflict. And when you do, where do you go? And what happens? And how do you engage in it? See, the difference between the community of faith and every other human community that exists out there is that Jesus invites us to elevate our view of humanity in the midst of the chaos. See, he says, look, it's no longer suitable to just say, don't kill one another. That bar is far too low. That bar is ridiculously low, given the glory that exists inside of you, given the DNA of God that exists within you. He invites us to elevate that, and he says, look, you don't even get to harbor anger towards my son or daughter over there. Don't you dare. That is an image bearer that I have created. And so you don't even get the privilege of that anymore. That will not work for the oneness and the unity and the connection that I am longing for you to have. So he says, leave your gift and go correct that first, because it will be insufficient given the calling on your life and their life over there. We ought to be those who stay in the fire of relationship. In fact, I actually think that's one of the greatest indicators that you have connected to Jesus, is that you're willing to stay in the fire of relationship. That when things get difficult, when everything inside of you longs to be offended, when everything inside of you says, it is my right to cut bait and run, that the hallmark of someone who says, I follow a God who has forgiven every offense, who has forgiven every trespass, who has forgiven every wrong, is that I choose to stay with you when you do the same. I choose to hang in the relationship. See, this is the beauty that Jesus invites us into, releasing our own right to ourselves and unleashing unity and unleashing longevity and unleashing hope in the midst of unthinkable situations. Humanity Church will never be a perfect community. Here's the thing, I will actually tell you, the closer you get to us, the more ugly we will become. Because let me just tell you, you can sit in a chair and you're like, this place has it together. Look at this. Even when the lights don't work and we have to pull out lamps, it's cool, right? Like this place has it going. But let me just tell you, the closer you get, you're going to go, oh. Because look, the closer and more intimate you get with anyone, the more likely you are to be hurt, offended, angered, overlooked, and what you do in the midst of that will determine everything. See, the miracle is not that Jesus makes us perfect. The miracle is that Jesus transforms how we see one another in the midst of the mess. The miracle is that Jesus transforms our perspective on one another when we ought to be highly offended. When we have every right to cut bait and run, we say, I choose to stay. See, we follow a God who pressed past conflict and endured the cross. Talk about an offense. The creator of the universe pressed past the chaos of what it means to be human and what it means to be hurt and what it means to be overlooked and what it means to be unheard and what it means to be disrespected. And he says, I choose to stay in it so that there would be a possibility for life and relationship on the other side. Wow. And this is why Jesus says, look, if you've come to give your gift, leave it there. and go make sure that whatever brokenness in your relationships is taken care of. Because if you come to me, the God who has sacrificed everything from you, and you're unwilling to sacrifice your offense, this won't work. It won't work. See, part of the beauty of this movement known as the church is that we are those who lay down our need to be offended and lay down our right to be offended and lay down our right to have things look a certain way and say, I choose to stay in the midst of it. But it requires trust that the cross is enough to move things towards wholeness and to move things towards beauty. Now, I'm not saying stay in every abusive relationship. I'm not saying stay in every toxic space. But I am saying, notice when you are choosing offense rather than willing to enter into the chaos that comes with relationship. And so in closing today, I want us to enter into a time of communion together. And you can play some music in the back. And I want to do communion a little different today. I want to do it not just a rush, let's go get some bread and some juice and remember this moment. But I'd actually like us to take Jesus' words seriously here. In 1 Corinthians 11, it says, "For I received from the Lord what I also delivered to you, that the Lord Jesus, on the night when he was betrayed, took bread. And when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, 'This is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me.' In the same way, he also took the cup after supper, saying, 'This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink the cup, you will proclaim the Lord's death until he comes.'" But then he says this, "Whoever therefore eats the bread or drinks the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner will be guilty concerning the body and blood of the Lord. Let a person examine himself then, and so eat of the bread and drink of the cup. For anyone who eats and drinks without discerning the body eats and drinks judgment on himself." See, if you're familiar with this kind of a setting, if church is like a normal thing to you, if not, you're welcome here. You're like a VIP this morning. But for those of us who are more familiar with this space, sometimes, like I said, we come to the table flippantly, not recognizing the gift that it is that the God of the universe would lay down his anger and offense and hurt and disrespect and say, "I will go to the cross," so that all of that could be covered, so that we could be in relationship with one another. That's what we do. That's what we remember when we go to communion. So it would be bizarre to go to communion with offense and anger in our hearts towards our brothers and sisters and thank God for his gift of forgiveness and mercy. So I'd like for you just right now to close your eyes for a moment. And I want to do exactly what the writer of this passage, Paul, calls us into right now. I'd love for you just to examine your own relational network, your own relational sphere right now. And I'd like for you just to ask the Lord, if this is like something that you do, if you're a praying person, maybe this is your first time here, God will actually speak to you as well, so just go with us. I'd like for you just to ask him, "Holy Spirit, would you reveal to me anyone that I am offended with, that I've chose offense? Could be a family member, a mom, a dad, a brother, son, daughter, cousin. Could be a coworker, a boss, someone at your office that you're just like, every time I'm with them, I get angry, I'm frustrated, I don't like being around them. Maybe it's a neighbor in your neighborhood. Could be a friend. Maybe it's someone here at Humanity. And would you be willing just to release that offense? It doesn't mean you have to dismiss what they did or didn't do. Doesn't mean you have to make it right. Like, make it right, what they did. It can still be okay that they hurt you or that there was some pain or betrayal. But would you be willing to let go of the offense? And would you just even ask God right now, how can I go and make that right if you need to? Just release it today in the same way that Jesus would release you as you receive communion today. And now I want you to ask maybe a harder question. Who's offended with you? Who in your life, when you look at, man, they're angry with me. They don't want to be around me. I've pushed them away. Maybe you've given up on them because they were offended or hurt. And again, I'm not talking about toxic relationships or abusive spaces where it's physically unsafe. I'm talking about those spaces where you're like, there's just a relational breakdown. And who are the people that you need to commit to going and reconciling with today? And how would it look to extend them the same grace that you're about to receive from the Lord, or remember from the Lord as we receive communion together? So we're going to go and we're going to receive communion with one another. And as we do, there's some tables in the back with bread and juice. If you're new to Humanity Church or you've never done this before, we just ask that you go with someone. And if you're alone, find someone around you. If this is like a new thing for you, or like you don't really know who Jesus is and that's not really like your thing, that's okay. If you're like, I'm not really comfortable receiving this, you can just stay in your seat and just contemplate who Jesus is for you today. In fact, we'll have some of our leaders in the back over here. If you're like, hey, I'd love to know who Jesus is, you can just go back and connect with them. Some of our staff will be back there, and maybe some of our elders, if they're available, we'll have them over there. Just if you're like, hey, I've never connected to Jesus, I'd love to do that. But I'd love for you to receive communion and to find someone. And as you do today, I'd love for you just to remember that the God who has every right to be offended with you has chosen love. The God who has every right to be offended with you has chosen mercy and grace and peace and kindness. And to revel in that today. Allow that to overwhelm you as you choose to release others from the offense. So I'm going to pray and then you can go receive communion. Lord, thank you that you are the God who chooses to be unoffendable. Thank you for the cross, that Jesus, you came and you died for us. And then you came back to life so that we could find mercy and healing and restoration and salvation from our own darkness. And you restored in us what it means to be human. God, would you allow us to extend that same grace and dignity and love and freedom and elevation to our brothers and sisters? In our remembering of your sacrifice today, would you make us unoffendable and those who clean up where we have offended? I thank you. In Jesus' name.
Thank you for joining us for this week's podcast. We hope that it was a meaningful experience and look forward to having you listen in next week for another conversation from the heart and soul of Humanity Church. You can find more information about our community at www.humanitychurch.com.